Get it done, and then we can get the news one done.
Oh, I'll give you a laugh before you start recording. One of the boys was like, I listened to your troll TV, and I'm like, okay. And he's like, aye, that's a dame that's in porn now. And I'm like, fuck off. And I'm not joking, it's a dame that looks like it she's in porn now. Like
Which one?
the fucking youngin.
Oh, the daughter.
The daughter. Aye. So there's a dame that's in porn now that looks exactly like the daughter then.
It's fucking 1980s, man.
He fucking he sent me a picture of the two of them, and I'm not joking, you would definitely think it was the same person. Like,
Fuck.
I'll try and find it because it's on WhatsApp, but I'll
Find
send
it,
it to
because
you.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see it. We could read her fucking porn titles and all.
Because it was just so fucking weird. I'm like, that's the same dame. That fucking Connor B.
I
Again.
just Comfort Cocktail 5.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
All right. Let's do this fucking episode.
Oh, go ahead and take a juice first. Fucking hell.
Put me right off my
Oh.
stall. Right.
You said it, baby.
You brought it up. Right, you ready?
Oh, fucking hell. All right, go for it.
Hello and welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and welcoming back today to the main show. It's been a while since we've had you do like a main show review. It's Nico. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Glad to be back in the main show
The
again.
last time we did a movie review on this show, like a movie review, I know you were obviously on the award show episode at the end of last year. That was technically your last episode. But the last time you did a main a movie review for us was Home Alone. We
Jesus.
did a Christmas one. We did Home Alone. Obviously, in the meantime, you've been doing all of our Patreon episodes with me as well, and we have reviewed some pretty interesting movies. I
Yeah.
think that's probably putting it mildly. We've done a bit of a variety. We've done last month we did Mean Girls, but we've also done Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, and a few others as well. So there's been some interesting reviews. We're going to be doing Return to Oz this month, which I'm also kind of excited about. I'm actually kind of excited to do that one.
All right, because
I
it is
am.
pure nightmare fuel.
It is. I remember watching it many times growing up. I obviously won't give too much away because that review is going to be coming out later this month, but I am very excited to do it.
I'm quite excited to do it as well because I watched it, what was that, about 3 days ago? Because I knew we had to watch it. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. And that's all I'm going to say just now.
Well, it's definitely going to be very exciting anyway. But this is episode number 129, and in today's show, we're covering the 2008 movie, The Midnight Meat Train. We'll obviously get into stuff about the movie in just a minute, but we'll do the housekeeping and that very quickly. Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. If you like what we do and you would like to support us even further, you can go to patreon.com/behindthescreams. You can sign up there for £1 per month. And you can hear both mine's and Nico's dulcet tones on both platforms there, as we do a number of bonus episodes a month. But there's also early access to this content and a host of other perks as well. So that's patreon.com/behindthescreams. We will shout out our Patreon subscribers at the end of this episode. You can also find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. We do a variety of shows on there. Normally do about four shows a week, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sunday nights from 7 p.m. UK time. Most of those shows are video game playthroughs, but we also do live episodes. We're going to be doing a live episode very soon. I think next Saturday, if you're listening to this on the day of release. We're going to be doing our live episode. It's pretty much just a Q&A episode. You can ask us anything you want, and we will try and get through as many of them as possible. Nico, I know you've already put at least one question to us, but that's going to be on our Twitch channel at 7 o'clock. Myself, Lindsay, and Lucy, we're going to be answering all of your questions, so join us for that. And then finally, we are also on TikTok, where you can see Lindsay's beautiful mug talking about horror trivia. Some other cool stuff going on there as well. So search for Behind the Screams Podcast on TikTok. Now I know I've asked you this many times before, but I always like to give you the opportunity, Nico. Have you got anything to plug?
No, nothing at all.
No. You're a sad, sad bastard.
I could plug Zeta's candles, Bright Spell candles.
We like supporting small businesses here. What kind Bright of candles does she sell?
I don't pay attention to that. They smell nice. That's all I know.
Okay. Do you know the plug?
Bright Spell candles.
Bright Spell. There you go. So for all your candle needs.
He delivers everywhere.
There you go. Check that out. Anyways, that's it for housekeeping. Try and keep it nice and short this week. Shall we talk about this movie?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, we are talking about The Midnight Meat Train. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
What interests you?
The city. Because no one's ever captured it. Not the way it really is. That's my goal, that's my dream.
Then you're failing. The next time you find yourself at the heart of the city, stay put. Keep shooting.
It began with a photograph. A single act of unthinkable evil.
What happened?
I saw it.
Take your pictures to the cops.
I wasn't stalking her.
But you did continue to photograph.
No.
These represent missing people for the last 3 years.
The only way to make it stop.
I followed them into the subway. He butchers them like cattle. They never find the remains because he unloads the meat somewhere.
Is to go for the ride.
I got a train to catch.
From the legendary mind of Clive Barker. Visionary director Yuhei Kitamura. See it the way it was meant to be seen. The Midnight Meat Train. Unrated director's cut. Own it on DVD and Blu-ray.
This movie was released in 2008, was directed by Ryuhei Kitamura. I am terrible with names. I feel like I'm only getting worse and worse and worse.
Glad you're here, not me.
Yeah, and it stars Vinnie Jones, Bradley Cooper, and Leslie Bibb. The IMDb plot is as follows. A photographer's obsessive pursuit of a dark subject matter leads him into the path of a serial killer who stalks late-night commuters, ultimately butchering them in the most gruesome ways. Just before I noticed, like, the trailer that we play just in the run-up to this was actually the trailer for the DVD release of this and not the actual trailer for the cinema release. That's why you'll have heard DVD bump in that, but that's the one I could find. So, Nico, what made you... Because did you choose this one? I think you did, didn't you? Or did I suggest...
Yeah, we talked about it when we were at work one time, and I think you remembered, and then you suggested it to me.
Yeah, so what is it about this particular movie that made you sort of be like, this is the one you wanted to come back on the show to talk about?
It's the fact that it's got a cast that you always forget all these people are in it.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much, even watching it now, like, I watched it and forgot several of the characters who they were. And it's not a bad thing, that. It's because there's some really good acting in it.
Yeah, the cast is definitely... I don't know if I could say it's surprising, the cast. Because obviously, like I say, you've got those three that I read out. You've got Vinnie Jones, you've got Bradley Cooper, you've got Leslie Bibb. Brooke Shields is in this movie. There's a lot of people in this film who you may know who they are, but you maybe don't know their names. So Roger Bart, for example, who plays Jurgis in this movie, he's been in a whole variety of things, like very famous actor. You've also got Peter Jacobson, who plays the sort of guy that runs the cafe. He's probably best known, I think, for being in House, the TV series. Fucking Rampage Jackson's in this.
Like that was the one I was most shocked at in it as well, was Rampage. I'm like, is that it?
We'll get onto his scene in a little bit. And then, of course, as well, Ted Raimi is in this movie, although albeit very, very briefly. But I don't know, there's something quite satisfying every time Ted Raimi pops up on my screen. Something about Ted Raimi being in horror films. It just brings a little bit of warmth to my soul, and I love it.
A bit of warmth, does it?
It does.
I'm sure it brings a bit of warmth in this movie to him.
Well, we'll talk about his fate in a little bit as well. But the cast is... It's all-star, really, isn't it? It's an all-star cast. Yeah. I mean, Bradley Cooper... I mean, this film came out in 2008. Bradley Cooper wasn't an unknown at this point.
Yeah.
Which...
And Vinnie Jones as well. He'd been in a few things already.
Mm. So like, Vinnie Jones has obviously gone on. And we shockingly, have already... one of our Patreon movies was a Vinnie Jones featured movie as well, when we did Snatch.
Yeah.
Which happened 8 years prior to this. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was a decade before this. So, like, he'd been in a lot of things. Gone in 60 Seconds in 2000 as well. And that's just, like, you know, just a few to name a few. So we're not talking about people who are at the start of their career, because a lot of actors do start their careers off in horror and things like that, just because they tend to be relatively low budget and that. But Bradley Cooper and Vinnie Jones... well-known names at this point in their career, in terms of movie careers. Obviously, Vinnie Jones was a well-known name, at least in the UK, to sports fans and things like that before.
Most famous for grabbing Gaza's bollocks.
I'm sure most people have seen that image of him just grabbing Paul Gascoigne's testicles.
They used it in a game cover. I can't remember what the game was, but they used that.
They did! Was it not like This Is Football or something?
I genuinely can't remember, but I remember seeing that image, and I remember seeing it when I was going to buy a game, thinking, what the hell, you know what I mean?
Sensible soccer.
Something like that, you know?
But, so, obviously, like you say, very, very well known. So, I don't know, when did you first see this?
I saw this in a cinema.
You saw it upon release, because it was years later I saw this. I probably didn't see this for the first time until actually just a few years ago.
This was an era of those movies where it didn't have that big a release.
It didn't, and we will definitely get onto that a little bit later on. But you're right, it didn't have a big release. It didn't get a lot of push behind it. For those who don't know, Midnight Me Train obviously is adapted from the Clive Barker's Book of Blood. The Midnight Me Train story was in, I think, Volume 1. Of his Book of Blood, and you know, was one of a number of stories from that went on to be adapted into a movie. Not Hellraiser. A lot of people do, I think that Hellraiser was part of the Book of Blood, but it wasn't. It was its own separate thing. So yeah, obviously this is from the sort of twisted mind of Clive Barker. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, assume that you're probably quite a big fan of Clive Barker and the movies of Clive Barker's stories.
For sure. Like Hellraiser, you mentioned that straight away, and I just love most of the Hellraiser stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about it before on other things.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can go through some of his... filmography. You've obviously got Hellraiser, you've got, I won't go through the sequels as well, but you've got, you know, Nightbreed from 1990, Candyman from 1992, Lord of Illusions in 1995, Midnight Meat Train, of course, 2008. There's been two Books of Blood movies, one in 2009 and one last year. The Hellbound Heart is going to be getting made into a new movie, but that's in the future. But it has been, you know, sort of announced for a number of years, like a long, long time. So take that with a pinch of salt, I think. So yeah, anyway, there's been a number of his stories been adapted. Hellraiser, I think, probably for most people is their favourite, right?
Oh yeah. Second favourite would be Nightbreed, like, but Hellraiser is definitely the best one.
So where does the Midnight Meat Train rank for you then?
See, I would say it's third on that list, because this is I know it sounds weird, but I was working away from home when this came out, and we were in London, and there was like a thing that they were always saying that, oh, you don't go on certain trains and everything. And we always just assumed it was like that story until I noticed Clive Barker's name come up. So it was like, because I didn't know it was off of that Book of Blood, you know, I'm like, okay, so this could be really, really good then. But I'm sitting in the cinema basically like Scrooge McDuck or something, rubbing my fingers to like going, this is going to be great, like, you know. And then I'll look at it like, what are you doing
now? When I was sort of trying to do a bit of research and get people's opinions on this, one thing that came up was a lot of people went into this assuming it was going to be trash simply based off the name The Midnight Meat Train. Do you have any issues with what this movie is called? For like, does it, it's because it's not the, it's possible, it's not like the most memorable name, it's not the name that's perhaps slips off the tongue the easiest, but a lot of people out there was really sort of heavily critical of what this movie was called and sort of felt that it almost prejudged them for what the movie was going to be. Did you have any issues with that when you first saw this?
Well, as I said, it was when I was working away from home, and all of us had, I think it was Cineworld at the time or Virgin Pass or whatever it was, so it was like you got to see your movies for free near enough. Mm-hmm. And we all went into this because we couldn't agree on anything that we hadn't not seen yet. So it was literally, I've seen that, well, I've seen that, well, I've seen that. This was the only movie that none of us had all seen. So, and a lot of them were saying, this is going to be shit, this is going to be garbage. And as I said, I didn't even know it had anything to do with Clive Barker myself. I was one of those people that was going in thinking, this is going to be a cheesy, like, suspended thriller type thing, I thought it was. Because the trailer for the theatrical trailer, it didn't come across like this. It came across as the guy's looking for it. You didn't know Vinnie Jones was actually doing it. Mm-hmm. So the trailer that we saw for it, you never knew that he was actually doing the killings or anything. You just thought this was a photographer that was stalking somebody he thought was a killer.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Because like I say, I don't really remember this movie around its release time. Like you say, it didn't get a big push, and I'll obviously go into more details about that a little bit later on. But so I was just sort of interesting, because obviously you see it in cinema. It's interesting to sort of gauge a little insight into what some people might have thought about it, you know, coming when it was coming out. And like you're saying, obviously that push wasn't great, you know, because you would consider yourself a big fan of horror. So the fact you know, that you've got a Clive Barker adapted movie coming out that you're unaware of, I think that probably speaks volumes to how badly this movie was pushed.
Yeah, because they genuinely, they put it across in a similar way of like Room with a View and movies like that, where it's somebody trying to find out if somebody's a killer. Mm-hmm. And it was getting definitely portrayed like, is he not in the trailer?
Yeah, and of course in the movie we find out in the first 3 minutes that he is.
So in the first 3 minutes you're like, yeah, we know, this is just totally opposite to what the trailer's been pushing. Mm-hmm. And it was just, and straight away I was like, oh yes. And you could see a couple of the other guys were like, don't know. But it was, when we all came out of the cinema, there was only like two of them that didn't like it.
Okay, that's interesting. I think this is a film that, as well, that, you know, people will make assumptions of negatively. I think people look at this, I don't know if they look at the poster, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with the poster, but look at the name, look at maybe the reputation, look at its box office performance, whatever, and just automatically assume this must be a really garbage movie. And I disagree with that. I don't think this is the greatest movie of all time or anything like that, but this is a solid fucking film.
Yeah.
Like, there's issues, and I will get into the issues that I have, but all in all, this is a fun ride of a movie. It's got some really, really good pieces of sort of effects. It's got some really rough pieces of effects.
Yeah.
But it's got decent acting. I wouldn't say that it's Bradley Cooper's best performance in the entire world. I wouldn't say it's probably one of the best utilizations of Vinnie Jones, despite the fact, you know, he doesn't say anything, which is probably for the best in this film. I think, you know, in this kind of movie, especially one that's set, or is this just set in New York? It's New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's set in New York, I feel like if they had Vinnie Jones speaking, it would maybe detract, it would perhaps almost add a little comedy element that they're maybe not wanting.
Yeah, because the only time he really talks is muffled and you don't really hear his accent.
Yeah, he says one word at the end as well. Is it welcome or something he says?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's fine. You can get away with that. Because he's all gargled and things, because, spoilers, he's dying. Right, let's get into actually some of these sort of scenes and talk about them. So we've got this photographer, Leon, who is kind of looking for his big break, isn't he? He's you know, I think we're assuming he's like, kind of like an unpublished photographer. He's not really made it big time. And he gets this meeting with a potential sort of, is she like an art dealer?
Yeah.
Susan, played by Brooke Shields.
She's a gallery owner.
Gallery owner, that's the one.
A lot of them in New York do that shit.
So Leon and his fiancée Maya, their friend Jurgis hooks them up with Susan, and she pretty much tells them that no, he's not good enough yet. Like, that his work's not, like, gritty enough. He doesn't wait long enough for the right shot. He needs to linger about a little bit more and try to get sort of, pretty much telling him just to be more, a little bit more risque, isn't it, in his photography.
He's telling him to be more gritty and stuff. Like, the perfect example is she's like, I want to see the dirt touching the suit, meaning the guy.
Yeah, she takes a photograph of, like, a business guy next to a homeless man there's a homeless man sleeping next to him in the train, and she says something like, I want to see the filth touching him.
Yeah, because the guy's obviously slowly falling asleep, so he's slowly drifting over to where the business guy is, and you can see the business guy's edged over, you know, his body away.
I've been that guy on social media who's fallen asleep. Social media? Social media? What am I talking about? Public transport was what I was going for there. How did I get social media?
I've been the guy that fucking someone's fell asleep on more than once.
I've been the guy who's fallen asleep because I used to work long, long hours. I would get up at like 6 in the morning and not get home till like 8 p.m. and then do it all over again for like weeks at a time. So I've been that guy who's like fallen asleep. And I've always been very conscious of, like, when I'm falling asleep, especially when you're on public transport. So I've always tried my best to, like, lean away. But I'm probably sure that I've been sort of too close into someone's personal space on more than one occasion where I've been falling asleep.
Yeah, I've been drilled on the tube. I've had heaps of stuff. It's quite disturbing when you have somebody fall asleep on you.
It just means they love you, Nico.
I'm too polite to shove them away. I'll normally try and angle them towards the window if it's that way. But if they're in the aisle and I'm sandwiched against the window, I'll tend to just shove them and have my arm basically holding them up so everyone's looking like I'm trying to choke the person. You know, I'm technically just holding them there.
Based on some of the stories you've been telling, you probably are just trying to choke them. It's just your kink.
It is just in the bedroom, but I was on the tube one day, and it was roundabout when this movie was out. That's the funny part. There was a girl that fell asleep on me, and there was a couple of the guys I was working with there, and they're just laughing, and they're like, go on, nudge her, dear, like holding her up. I'm like, nah, she's fine, it's fine. She's tiny, like she was about 5 feet, you know. I'm like, she's fine. And it got to my stop, and I got to get up. And as I got up, you could see on my jumper this big, massive trail of drool right down my arm. And I'm like, you motherfucker, you know. And she's like, sorry, you know, the British way of doing it. Sorry, that's what I'm saying sorry for, but I'm saying sorry because I've just woke up.
Just
one of those moments, you know, and they were laughing their tits off.
Oh, well, there you go. So, So yes, anyway, bringing it back to the movie. So Leon's basically told, go out, be more risque, be more gritty, be more sort of dirty almost with his photography. So, you know, he goes out that night, doesn't he, to try and take some photographs. And he sees these sort of three men going into the train station. They look like they're out to cause trouble. So he follows them into the subway station, and they are trying to, or are about to, assault a young woman.
Yeah, because they're your typical gong bangers that you see in movies from round about that time. There are three guys, you can blatantly tell they're up to no good. They're throwing bottles, they're doing stuff like that, you know, as they're going into the subway, and he's taking pictures of this because he's been told to be more grey.
Yes. So I just knocked off a ton of shit off my desk. So he follows them in, and then they've sort of got this woman cornered on the stairs, don't they? And, yeah, you know, they're making inappropriate advances at her. And he's just standing at the top of the stairs, continuing to take photos. Do you, like, and then she spots him. She sees him at the top of the stairs taking photos, and he decides to call out the three guys. If she hadn't had spotted him, do you think he would have called them out?
See, this is the bit I'm not sure of. Because, like, he's taking pictures of her being more grey, because he's seen her pinned on the stairs. And you can see that she's a beautiful woman. You later find out she's a model. And it's... I can't remember if the guy says the line first, there's a toll to pay, you get on your knees or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when he sort of moves forward, and then she looks at him. Okay. So you can see sort of doing it just before she sees him.
So you think once he sort of figures out that there's the potential that they're going to sexually abuse her, that's when he decides to step forward. If they were just going to mug her, he maybe wouldn't have done anything.
I see, that's the thing, like, they've already got a knife on her face, you know what I mean? And he's not moving then. And you're thinking to yourself, really, fucking, whether it was going to be a difference between assault and sexual assault, you'd think he would man up and do something about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then so, anyways, I mean, like, I'm kind of the opinion that I'm not so sure you would have... I think at this point, the obsession for him has already sort of kicked in, and he's so obsessed with getting the right shots, even though he hasn't photographed Mahogany yet, who, you know, he hasn't been introduced to. I don't think he would have done anything. But eventually he does, and he only really gets saved by them, because they obviously all approach him and go to attack him. He's saved by the fact that he points out they're all on CCTV, and they fuck off. And then this woman snogs him, basically. And
she's basically saying thank you to him.
Yeah, but let's face it, like she, no one's doing that, right?
You never know.
You do though.
Like, well, goes through, remember, a hero complex doesn't just work for men, it works for women too.
No, I know, but I just find it highly unlikely that you could potentially save someone who's about to be sexually assaulted and their immediate response would be to give you a full snog on the lips. Like, no, I'm no about that. And anyways, so that happens. She gets on the train. You know, Leon leaves, and you might have saved.
He's taking pictures of her all the way as she's going to the train as well.
Yes, because she almost doesn't make the train, but Mahogany, played by Vinnie Jones, holds the door open for her.
Yeah,
you know, and we see the ring, and the ring will be important. We know we will. There's a link to someone else in this movie because of the pattern that's on his ring. Anyways, he saves her from being sexually assaulted, only for her to get on a train to be brutally murdered. It's not a good night for this woman.
No, she was a way to get raped, which would have made her live, or she goes down to the train and dies. You don't know that at the time, but it's not exactly the best scenario for her, is it?
It's not a good sort of either or that. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's not an option. That's not two options. Like, oh, if you had to choose, well, I don't know. Like, some people.
I devil's advocate.
Like, some people would
have to choose.
A lot of people would probably just choose murder.
Aye.
So yeah, so that's the end of her. She's not the first death. I kind of forgot to talk about it, but there is a, we get like an opening death scene at the very beginning.
Oh, we should have talked about the opening death scene
at the very beginning of this. Well, we do, because the guy that we see at the opening, we don't actually see him die.
Yeah,
we just see he looks through the
very start.
Yeah, he looks through the sort of windows of the carriage to the next carriage over.
No, because I like the start, because the start is where the bald guy wakes up in the train and he goes to stand up and falls flat on his back, which is, he slides on something, doesn't know what it is, and it's just blood.
A lot of blood. Now, obviously, when Mahogany kills the model, like, it's in a very brutal fashion. I want to quickly just sort of jump forward to some of the other kills, and we'll come back and fill in some of the gaps later on. We also got this scene a little bit later on. You've got like two businessmen and one of their wives is on the subway. Bear in mind that these are always like the late trains. It's always the night trains as well. So there's very, very few people on there.
Yeah, these are the last train home type situation.
Yeah, definitely. Now, obviously, one of these two businessmen, as I've alluded to already, is good guy Ted Raimi. and Ted Raimi meets an unfortunate end because he gets hit. You know, it's worth pointing out at this point that the weapon of choice of Mahogany is a meat tenderizer, which is an unusual weapon for a serial killer. You know, you've got your sort of standard knives or hooks or I don't know what else, guns and things like that. Meat tenderizer, bit blunt force, like generally doesn't sort of tend to be the style of choice of weapon. But especially when we sort of get onto the big sort of end fight, I'll talk about it a bit more. But basically, strikes Ted Raimi's character on the back of the head and his eye pops out in what is possibly one of the worst pieces of CGI.
See, this is the thing with this movie. It has got some of the worst CGI and every single kill's got this over-elaborate blood.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's not a lot of real, actual blood effects apart from when it's splattering, like the splatter ones,
yes,
it's hitting somebody. That's it. Everything else is CGI blood, and it's just horrid.
But it's got some decent practical effects, this movie, around the eyes as well. I'm thinking specifically later on when he's like scooping a dead body's eyes out, you know, and he's clipping off their fingernails and stuff like that. Like, that all looks good.
So, yeah, sorry, I'm just separating two cuts, fine.
I can hear them having a wee battle there in the background.
She does just come off a heap.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
Back to what we're saying. So yeah, Ted Raimi's one, that whole death scene with him sets up the next two deaths, which I quite like.
Yeah, go on then.
Because, well, his eyes popped out and the blood's on the floor.
Yep.
So is it his wife or his partner's wife? I can't remember.
I don't know
remember.
Which one of them. Because the guy's also talking about them having a threesome.
Basically, yeah. So the other guy, he slides in the blood and then he gets killed and then she's bucking up trying to get away. It slides on one of the eyes and just that's her. And you see her getting bludgeoned by the thing is that meat tenderizer is huge. Like the weight on it is unbelievable. And the way he's hitting her, swiping her back and forth and she's still alive. You just think to yourself, the first swipe would have got her. And then you realize it's not that the first swipe would have got her, he's taken her head off with it.
Yeah. One thing I will say is, I'm assuming it was a prop tenderizer and actually was made of foam or was very light or something like that. But Vinnie Jones carries it like it's fucking Thor's hammer.
Aye. It's like, you look at it and it looks heavy. Like, the only time it doesn't look heavy is when he kills Rami, because after he's hit him, they've got jelly hanging off it and it looks like it's made of jelly then. But every other time, he looks terrifying holding it. He looks like he's more built the way he's holding it, and he's not that built, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We've also, I'm gonna just sort of quickly go through some of the death scenes here and then we'll come back. We've also got this scene that we alluded to earlier with Rampage Jackson, who, for those who maybe don't know who we're talking about, was a UFC fighter. And
he also played Mr. T in the new...
He played Mr. T in the AT movie. I think he was involved in professional wrestling for a while as well? I think he was in TNA or something.
Genuinely no idea.
but I could be entirely making that up. We have this scene now. He is a big motherfucker.
Yeah, he's playing one of them Subway Guardian Angels as well.
Yeah, like he's the fucking good guy. And
those guys are built, so they've got the right guy for the job with this one.
Oh, I mean, he looks like Vinnie Jones. Like that's I know he's a football player, but he's from that sort of era where football players did have a bit about them. And Vinnie Jones is also known notoriously for having a bit more than a little bit of something about him. And
the Wimbledon team that were the crazy gang, yep.
Exactly. And so Vinnie Jones is no slouch, let's put it that way. And
yeah, that team was famous for fighting amongst themselves, never mind fighting with other teams.
Exactly.
So he's the definition of a football hard man. And he shedded that very quickly and just became a Hollywood hard man instead.
Yeah, but I mean, Vinnie Jones is not, you know, it's not just a case of, oh, well, he's bulked up for films. Vinnie Jones is just genuinely a pretty tough guy. And so
that's what I mean. He's not huge. He's not like Rampage Jackson. You look at them two in the scene, and Rampage, you can tell he's got a bit of weight behind him. He can throw.
Yeah.
And Vinnie Jones isn't that built next to him, but still gets the better of him with ease.
And what I like about this fight and the one at the very end that we'll talk about as well between him and Leon is, you know, there's a tendency sometimes in horror movies to over choreograph fight scenes and make that, you know, doing flips or, you know, stuff that's maybe just completely ridiculous and is never going to happen. There's almost, despite how fantastical this movie is at some points, there's almost a sense of just fucking realness with the fights in this, and that, you know what, it's just two fucking big blokes or two blokes proper just slugging it out.
And the thing is, that fight with Rampage Jackson, it looks like there isn't going to be one. So you're watching this, and unless you know it's Rampage Jackson, which a few of us at the time we were watching it did, and a few of us didn't, It doesn't look like he's going to get the better of him, because he's just the way to hit him in the head, and then all of a sudden he starts coughing up blood for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, I like that whole, it looks like this is just going to be his next victim, but the victim gets a chance, proving that this guy isn't just this crazy immortal Myers type, you know?
Yeah, where he's fallible, isn't he?
Yeah, and I quite like that in the killers. I like when they're like that. Like, Rampage even pulls a knife and gets the better of him and is standing over Vinnie Jones. And Vinnie Jones then hits him, I think it's in his knee, with the hammer and gets him back down.
Yeah.
And he's not winning that fight. Like, Rampage is getting the better of him. He's just a way to stab him. And then that's when you're introduced to the driver.
Yes, of course. I was sitting here, you were talking about it, and I was like, fuck, I can't remember how this scene ends. the driver comes through and shoots Rampage Jackson through the eye as well, so they've really got a thing about eyes in this film.
Yeah, I think they found CGI eyes cool.
Yeah.
In every single one, because, like, there's that one, there's, is it the guy gets stabbed as well? I can't remember. Oh, no, there's a stab through the mouth, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is where we find out that the driver is in on it. And at this point, we don't know what in on it even means. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure by the end of this film, do I know what in on it even means. We'll discuss that a little bit in just a few minutes when we get to the end scene. But just to wrap up this sort of Rampage Jackson portion, like I was saying, I really like the fact that it's just two fucking hard men having a bit of a slugfest. It brings a little bit of realness to this for me as well. It makes this film just a little bit more gritty as well, a little less clean cut, because there is even though, you know, this is a really gory film, there's something a little bit surgical about it at times.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And this sort of brings it back into that almost sort of real world. Because this is a film about someone who, whilst not immortal, obviously is not of this world, or is under the influence of something that's not of this world. So I thought it was really important to almost bring that back down to, you know, a here and now kind of level, if that sort of makes sense.
Because this is the thing with it. The Rampage one is one of the most important scenes, because it proves that he's getting weaker, he can't do the job anymore, and that becomes relevant towards the end.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about Mahogany before we talk about this big end scene. Because obviously Vinnie Jones plays Mahogany. And throughout this film, you've really got no fucking clue what this guy is all about. We don't know, you know, obviously we find out things as Leon finds things out, really. You know, we don't really get any other insight aside possibly from that Rampage Jackson fight, where obviously yeah. Leon's not there. And you know, we see him, he's got these, I don't know how to call them, would you say just scars on his chest?
Yeah, he's like gross, he's got like gross on his chest, but yeah. he's also got the pattern that gets put in the chest that are scars yes. underneath it. So I think the scars end up like a tattoo and the gross come off of it. Because this is the thing that's like, as we're learning about Mahogany, as you said, he's getting newspaper clippings and stuff from like 100 years ago. So it's implying that it's the same guy from 100 years ago
mm-hmm.
that's doing this, because it's the same meat packing plant that he works for. It's the same job he does, because it's a butcher, because he finds a newspaper clipping saying a butcher 100 years ago
yeah.
was killing folk on trains. And from that, he just assumes this is the exact same guy doing all of this. And the weird thing about this movie is after every kill, near enough, there's almost straight away a sex scene in it. Have you noticed that?
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I almost found that slightly weird.
That is bizarre. I hadn't picked up on that at all.
Because, like, the first one where it's the model going down to the train, he goes home.
And they have sex on the couch, yeah. don't they? The second yeah. one, they have... That's when is that the second one when he proposes to her and they have sex in the cafe?
Is that the Rampage one, is it?
Is that the Rampage one? I can't remember if that was the Rampage or the Ted Raimi one, but it was one of them.
Yeah, there's that one. And it's not like he's being a... Because you see the evolution of him becoming, like... This he goes from being this nice guy vegan, that is specific in a minute. Yeah, because I'm not going vegans. like, the way I said that, I'm like, it sounds like I hate vegans.
He hates vegans. But yeah, you're right, especially in the sex scene in the cafe as well, because there's a different emotion in the air when they're going on. Like, as that there's almost a. She doesn't seem to be enjoying this very much.
Yeah, and he's like, what's
being a lot more sort of rough.
Yeah,
and his demeanor has changed. I'm trying to think yeah. of ways of saying this without being. But yeah, the whole sort of sense, this whole sort of feeling of that scene.
It's like he's trying to dominate her during the sex scene. Yes. That's what it's like. It's like he's went from being this guy who. Because the evolution of the sex scenes tells a lot about his character.
Yeah.
Because the first sex scene, they're just, it seems like a new relationship, they're having fun. And then this sex scene that we're just talking about, he straight away starts eating out her ass and then just goes for it and is trying to dominate her from there on.
Yeah, and she doesn't seem to be about that.
Exactly, she just does, and he's just proposed and he's basically being this way and... That's when he's become obsessed with Vinnie Jones at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to find out what the guy is doing.
So one thing I wanted to sort of ask in and around that, because obviously, like we say, we do obviously see the character of Leon's behaviour change quite dramatically as this movie goes on. excuse me. Is... Now, obviously, spoiling the ending, Leon becomes the new Mahogany. I don't know if the name carries over or what, but he becomes the new Mahogany at the end. So
he becomes the new butcher guy that Vinnie Jones is. He becomes a guy that's killing folk.
Yes. And which in itself raises a number of questions. But
yeah.
where do you think that the change of Leon began? Because obviously we've seen him, you know, eating meat when he was a vegan. You know, we see him, the sort of evolution of the sex scenes like we were talking about. Is it a case of as soon as he first laid eyes on Mahogany? Is it the case of that first photograph that he took of him? You know, where do you think the change began?
See, this is the weird thing that I noticed in it rewatching it, right? Before the, like, he sees the model, the, like, he has a dream of being on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a flash of a body upside down in the train and he's dreaming, but he gets up and he goes out to actually start photographing and being this like
photographing.
Photographer, trying to be all posh there. When he's trying to be the photographer out catching being this gritty guy, he has a flash in that dream of basically a body upside down in the train. So is this thing at the end controlling him from that point onwards? That's what I was thinking when I rewatched it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure it's a question that I particularly know the answer to be honest. But it definitely brings up... What's one of the things I like about this question is this movie is, even though it's, I feel like... one of the things I like about it is the fact that not everything in this film is fully explained 100%. You know, a lot of it is left up to interpretation. I do think they could have explained a little bit more specifically around the creatures and that we see at the end of the movie. But that's probably just my own personal preference. By and large, I like the fact that this movie almost doesn't handhold you through this film and explain everything very ABC. Which a lot of horror movies do have a tendency to do sometimes. And I actually really liked that fact about this movie.
Because it's like the whole, is this thing that controls Vinnie Jones killing him? That was what I was thinking as well. Because he's keeping all those fucking things he's cutting off his chest.
Yeah.
Like, keeping them in jars.
So do you think it's you know, I mean, what is it, do you think, that is killing Vinnie Jones? Because obviously, like you say, as the movie goes on, we find out that Mahogany isn't well. He's got these growths that he's been cutting off and keeping in jars. Why is he keeping them in jars? I don't know. But, you know, is it a case of maybe do you think he is the been a lot around for 100 years? Or do you think he's maybe taken over from someone, I don't know, 15, 20 years previously, and it's just been a succession of people?
See, I think we're Bradley Cooper taking over, it's definitely a succession of people, because obviously the killer from 100 years ago found guilty in New York, so he's been binned. Vinny's probably taken over at that point, and it's all that's what I think it is. I think these things take the folk to take care of them, basically.
Yeah. Okay, it was just interesting to see if whether you thought that it would have been Vinnie Jones for that entire 100 years, because we do sort of get the sense that that might be what happens. You know, you take care of these creatures and you sort of, one of the side effects is just longevity in terms of, you know, you have a much longer sort of lifespan, but obviously that comes at the cost as well. And then as well, you've got the role of the driver who, you know, we know is working with Mahogany at one point, but it's not until the very end that we really sort of, even then, we don't really find out what his ultimate role is, other than he drives the trains that feeds these creatures.
See, I think he's the backup, so that the creatures, like if Mahogany or anyone that's doing that job gets in trouble, because straight away when Mahogany's getting in trouble with Rampage, he knows, pulls the gun and goes through and blows his head off.
So you think he's like just that sort of second layer of attack? And
I think he's the protection.
Okay, that would make sense. I'm not disagreeing with you, but again, it's something else that's is left very open to interpretation, because he's ultimately, once Mahogany has been disposed of, is the one who forces Leon to fully turn.
Yeah, because when you see him, you know he's turned when he's doing the meat, because as I said, he's a vegan beforehand. He's talking to the guy, making him get tofu on a grill, and he's like, God, if my fathers knew this, they'd kill me and all this sort of shit. And he has the tofu, and then when, I can't remember which character it is, somebody's having a steak.
Jurgis. And it's Jurgis.
Is it Jurgis, is it? When Jurgis is having a steak, he cuts a bit, and he's just the way to stick the fork in it, and he grabs it and puts it in his own mouth, and he's rubbing the plate, and it's very...
He's like licking his fingers, because he's got the sauce on it. And
he's... You can tell it's something taking over him. He's craving meat at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it just makes me wonder if those things are controlling him from then, because the only other thing that he's done is he's went to the meat plant, and I don't think a meat plant would convert a vegan to wanting meat.
No, I don't think so. We'll talk about the scenes in the meat plant in just a second, but sort of like the last string of this sort of story is the police. They are also involved in protecting these creatures. Now, this movie at no point explains what these creatures are. So that is fully left up to our own interpretation. Do you have any theories on what you think they are?
All they say is they were here before humans.
Do we just think there's some sort of ancient creature rather than potentially some sort of mythical creature?
Well, you know how ancient creatures, a lot of the other horror movies, they've made the ancient creature becomes like demons and stuff like that.
Yes.
That's the sort of way it goes. But I think it's something that's been worshipped by man, and this is their way of keeping them hidden in case they are gods, they're not sure.
So
that's
this,
my interpretation of it.
Does this mean, because like I say, none of these points that we're bringing up are wrong, because like I say, it's all up into our own interpretation, but they all bring up other questions. Does this mean then that ultimately Mahogany's the good guy?
Well, look at it this way. Cabin in the Woods has an ending where everyone dies because they didn't do the sacrifices.
Yeah.
I think this is along that sort of lines. I think they're sacrificing these people to appease these things, to keep the balance, because he does say that, the balance. The driver says
that. So I think, if, let's for example say, because ultimately, if anyone hasn't seen this film, Mahogany is killing these people and using their bodies to feed these creatures. That's how they're being fed. Do we think then if that was to say stop, that these creatures would just, you know, leave the stations, go up onto like ground level and start killing people?
Yeah, that's what I think, because you see how easy they lift the meat off the hooks. And I say meat because part of the thing that they do with this is they take the hair off, they remove the teeth, they remove the fingernails, they remove anything that is hard to digest, basically, yeah. Apart from the bones. And you see what happens to the bones later on anyway. So the whole thing with that is they are treating these people like meat for these animals, basically, mm-hmm. for these ancient things. So my interpretation of it was these are some ancient fucking thing that they're appeasing to stop them going up and killing everyone.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that was also my interpretation of this. So we're very much on the same page there. I want to take it back quickly to this sort of big final fight scene then that we've got between Leon and Mahogany, because obviously we'd mentioned before about the Rampage Jackson fight that Vinnie Jones had, and you know, the sort of brutal nature of this. This is very much along those same lines, but obviously Bradley Cooper's not as big Quentin Rampage Jones is.
Full name Sunday Service.
I know, I was just like, oof, there you go. And is much more probably on a par or closer to the sort of similar build that Vinnie Jones has.
Because it's not like he's small, but it's not like he's big either.
No, and this film kind of portrays him as being a little bit smaller, I think. I think they sort
if
of...
If you look at it, he's the same size all the way through, but the clothing that he wears makes him look bulked up. They basically do a Henry VIII on him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see him start off, like, from when he's in the meat plant, where he puts on the stuff, making it look like he's inspecting the meat plant, because he's trying to find out information from that point. He looks bigger than basically the first scene you see him in.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, he's in the suit, the same as Vinny, yeah. And he looks the same size, he looks the same build. The suit's cut the way to make him look quite scary, basically. Look like there's something there that you wouldn't want to fuck with him with.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with the Rampage one, I forgot. Like, Rampage takes the piss out of Vinnie Jones by saying, what is it? It's the Forrest Gump one.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
He says that to him, you know what I mean? So it's like, when he's sitting there, he looks like he's one of those ones that's, you know, a bit special, but you wouldn't fuck with him because he's got...
He's got that bag as well, doesn't he?
he's got it sitting on his knee. He looks like you wouldn't want to interact with him, put it that way.
Yeah, and there's an air about him, isn't there, that would dissuade you from approaching him. I thought he was going to kill those two kids that were trying to sell him candy.
I know, Like, that bit's so funny. But there's two kids come on and they're trying to sell candy, and Bradley Cooper's like, fuck off to them. So they go through the next train, but he's been following Vinnie Jones at that point. And Mahogany's just sitting there, and he goes into the case where every other time he's went into this case, he's pulled out the hammer and killed somebody. And he gives them like a couple of dollars for a candy bar.
Yeah. I thought that was quite funny, actually.
I loved it, to be honest, yeah.
So my point coming back to it is, so we get this fight, and this fight seems very, very evenly matched. Now, obviously, Vinnie Jones does have some sort of special protection, that he doesn't seem to be feeling pain in quite the same way. But, you know, you can hear them grunting as well, you know, you can hear them sort of physically going at it, which I think, you know, adds to the scene. I think that's that really sort of adds to that sort of grittiness to it. But there's a lot of kind of cool effects in here as well, because whilst this is going on, you've got Jurgis hanging upside down, completely fucking starkers. He's totally naked. And you've got Maya there as well. And then, you know, Leon gets the better of Mahogany and almost has him sort of just about to sort of like get him off the train as it's going along. But he stabs Jurgis and like hangs on by that.
Aye.
I thought that was quite clever.
I like that bit, and then you just see the blood spray, and that, I think that's about the only time it's not CGI.
Yeah, and you could tell it made what a huge difference it made. So I kind of like that, and there's a lot of other aspects. It just felt like a really sort of brutal fight to me.
Yeah, but the thing is, before that fight even happens, you can tell that the evolution of him, like, we missed out a bit in the middle, just after the kids sell the candy. That's when he ends up getting taken back to the thing and getting the slashes on his chest instead.
Yes, that's right.
And like, that's the point. Like, you see two girls in the train, and when I was in a cinema, I'm like, oh well, they're going to die, because you see them and they look the stereotypical type that are going to be the next victims, basically. Yeah. And then they get off, and I'm like, oh, who's going to be killed then? It must be the kids. And then they get off as well, and it's just two random guys. Come on, you don't get any back to them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he kills those two. And after he kills those two, that's when Bradley Cooper goes through, because he's taking pictures of all the stuff that needs done to these bodies to make them ready for these things.
Yeah.
So he's there taking pictures of him using the clippers on the hair, pulling the fingernails off, and it's all that's like real special effects, not CGI.
I hate watching people getting their nails pulled off. Like, that's one of my things.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was well done.
Oh, I mean, it was really well done in terms of the effects. The practical effects here were so, so much better than some of the bad CGI that we've got in this film. So,
see, I like the fact they're doing this on a corpse. So it was quite good CGI, because normally, special effects, because normally when you're getting fingernails pulled off, it's always somebody that's alive, so they're pulling their hand away, and it doesn't look that good. But this, because it's a corpse, he's pulling it off slow, and you can see it peeling.
Yeah, and same with the hair. That's a fucking purpose, you dick.
I'm getting onto the teeth, and you know I hate teeth. Oh, I'm waiting onto the teeth next. Then you see him, he pulls the teeth out as well. Like, yeah. He puts the spreader on, and it's the way he moves it back and forth, like a dentist would, removing teeth from a corpse. Yeah, and you're like, and it's the way he's moving the head as well, like it's, you know, making it easier for him. And it's just the way he does all that. And then straight after all of this, he's got all the pictures, all the evidence of him doing all this stuff. And he just looks up and smiles at him. And to which point he's like, ah, shit. And Mahogany starts fucking going after him at that point, you know?
That's, like, that's a good reason to be like, ah, oh, fucking, fuck this.
Yeah. Like, Mahogany knew he was there all the time, and you don't think he does.
This is one of the things that I kind of have a bit of an issue with. And I know, obviously, we've been talking about the fact that he's going through changes, and it kind of explains things. But the fucking brass neck of Leon in this film, because he doesn't just follow Mahogany for most of this film. He follows him about a step and a half behind. Like, yeah. There's no way that he wasn't going to get spotted in all these places.
Yeah, like the first time he follows Mahogany when he comes up the escalator and he goes around the corner, that scene where Mahogany just stops dead, and I mean stops dead, has his back to him and doesn't say a word, doesn't move. It's so creepy, and it's like that's one of the scenes that I really like in this movie, because that's the bit where you're like, well, this is blatantly obvious the killer, and he's quite intense and quite terrifying, but still doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, with when Mahogany captures him, he ties him upside down like he does with a meat, but he doesn't put his feet through the hooks.
Oh, that you scene, I mean? By the way, with Jurgis's feet going through the hooks, and then later on with like the tendons being attached when the creatures are pulling it off. I like that effect.
That's the thing as well. Like the Bradley Cooper one, have you noticed that when Bradley Cooper's hanging upside down and these creatures go to him, it's like tentacles, it's like an octopus that's on him. And the stuff that's coming out of his chest that he's cutting off, the gross, is like tentacles, like the suckers on the tentacles. So I think it's like infecting them somehow.
So are we at this point, because there's no reason at this point, logically, for Mahogany, to not have just killed Leon. So is Mahogany aware at this point that he's going to die soon?
I think he is. I think he knows that he's a replacement.
So if that's the case, why does he fight him?
Probably to see if he's worthy.
Do you think that's just what it is? It's just a test. And if he passes the test, then that's fine, because Mahogany's then out the way and Leon can take over.
See, I think it's if you beat him, then you become him. There could be only one Highlander style.
To be the man, you got to beat
the man.
There you go. A little Ric Flair reference for everyone. Yeah, I knew you were going to do it. You couldn't resist, did you?
Anytime you do it, you can't.
Yeah, so that's fine. No, like I say, this one of the good things I really like about this film is that it you do draw some of your own conclusions. You have to sort of put things together yourself. The film doesn't walk you through it. Is there anything, other negatives that you want to talk about with this film?
Don't get me wrong, I sound like I'm absolutely loving this film. There's a lot of negatives. The CGI is just absolutely abysmal.
The CGI is bad. And I'm not just talking about the eye. That scene at the end after Leon's had his tongue ripped out and he's just got his mouth wide open.
Yep.
It looks awful.
Yeah. Because the thing about it is, like, there are scenes in it that just shouldn't be there as well. They're just there for filler. Like, perfect example, when we're talking about he's hanging upside down, the thing fucking carves the thing in his chest. So he's scarred up and got the same markings as what Mahogany's got.
Yeah.
So he goes upstairs from where the meat packing place was. So he goes upstairs from this abandoned subway, like, to the meat packing place. So you find out there's a station underneath. And then there's just a guy moving hooks. Now, why he's moving hooks, no clue, but he just looks at him and there's like it's about 5 minutes long of them just looking at each other. And you're like, what's the point of that scene?
It's just and we're not just talking about that scene as well. This is one of the issues that I have is the length of this film. It does drag a little bit in the middle.
Yeah.
For me, like, the pacing isn't... Like, it's all go at the beginning, because you've got that opening death scene, and that opening scene's very quick, you know, it's only a couple of minutes long, so you're not hanging about with it, you know, you've got the stuff with the model, that all happens really early doors.
Yeah.
So does the Ted Raimi stuff, I was gonna full name him again, but, and the Quentin Rampage Jackson stuff, that all happens relatively early on in the film.
Yeah.
And it feels very much like there's a bit of a lull in the middle, where... Oh, there's still stuff happening, but the pacing's a little bit weird for me.
Aye, because at that point, after he gets the markings and stuff in his chest, that's when it starts going weird. That's when you find out the cops are involved. It gets very slow at that point with details that you're meant to be paying attention to, but because it's going so slow, you miss stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, rewatching it, I've noticed that.
Yeah, I remember I don't think I remember sort of feeling like this the first time I watched it. I think I was, I don't know if it was just because of the excitement that this was so much more better than I had anticipated, that I'd maybe just sort of overlooked it. But when I was watching this again for this recording, I really picked up on it. There was a good sort of 15-minute chunk there in the middle where I was like, I was clock watching a little bit.
Yeah, because it's like, see after that, because that's when the coppers get involved in everything. And he's like, don't get the cops involved, but she still sees one. And it's, you notice then that that's when the cops are involved because she's got the necklace with the same ring.
Yeah.
So you notice that bit.
Which is never, it's never actually broached in the film. Again, exactly. That's another thing that's not explained by the movie, but if you're keen-eyed, you can put two and two together and you can see that.
Yeah. So, me being a horror fan, I was always looking out for shit like that. So I was like, I even said to one of my mates at the time in the cinema, I check this shit, fucking, she's in it. And he's like, no. And I'm like, shit is, look at the necklace. And he's like, fuck, how did you even notice that? Because they referenced the ring very clearly.
Yes.
Because he must have the best fucking camera in the world, because when the model's getting on the train and he's holding the door open...
I just say that camera does not look like the best fucking camera exactly. in the world.
He's managed to get a digital photo in a analog camera. It's just epic. Anyway, when he's got his hand there, cameras don't work like that. You get what you get with an analog camera, not a digital camera. The digital will take better pictures, but you see his hand against the door and you see the ring and you see the shape of it, and it always reminds me of that Paradise PD, you know, the asshole.
Yeah.
The yeah, asshole badge. It looks like that. So you see that on his ring, and the cop, when she goes to see the cop, because it's the girlfriend that goes to see the cop, she's got the necklace on the copper, and you're like, yeah, the cops are involved. So if you're keen-eyed enough, you know they're involved.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can spot that on. Obviously, it gets explained, like, you find out later on in the movie that they're involved as well. But yeah, they're you know, we were talking about there, you're talking about, you know, scenes in the meat factory after he was sort of captured and things like that. And there was a little bit too much of that, because it didn't explain anything as well. You know, yeah. It doesn't add anything to me to the storyline for this.
Yeah.
So it's possibly like, I can forgive the bad CGI, you know, like, whatever, like, it wasn't enough to take me out of this film. If anything, it made it just a little bit more campy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still going to maybe dock a mark or two for it, but, you know, it's not ruined the film for me. I wouldn't come out of this film and be like, oh, well, if it wasn't for that CGI, this would be a great film, but it's shit. No, this is still a good film, but that lull in the middle, it's almost boring, and I think that can be sometimes one of the biggest negatives you can throw at anything, really, in the entertainment world, is that if it bores you, you know?
You get a dead arc in the cinema at that point.
Definitely. That's where you can go for your pee break.
Like, don't get me wrong, it is full of details that you're meant to pay attention to, but it's better paying attention to it the second time around, because
the details don't
have any,
but they don't really have any payoff, the details, though. That's the point I'm making. Like, they don't end up being like a really critical point of the storyline. The fact that the policewoman's involved doesn't really matter a huge amount at the end of the day, you know? So that little detail that you're talking about, well, yes, it's a cool little detail that if you pick up on, you know, that she's got the same symbol on her necklace, that's a cool detail, and it's a little Easter egg for later on. But there's no real payoff to that.
Yeah, but it's like when they go to Mahogany's house, all the stuff in there, you've seen all the stuff already, apart from the journal. And it's going over more stuff that...
Can I just say,
doesn't get explained.
I love the fact that in every single drawer, he just has various murder weapons.
Yeah.
Because there's been a thing, like, I have a criticism. I think it's more of a criticism of horror games, necessarily, than horror movies. But, like, when you're searching about in drawers... There's like nothing in any of the drawers, and it's like, my house, I don't know about you, there's not many drawers in my house, but whenever I've had drawers in my house, they're chock-a-block full of shit.
Yeah, mainly weapons, I know.
but you know, in Mahogany's hotel room, his drawers are just full of fucking knives and claws and various weapons of torture. I kind of like that.
And the thing is, she steals the journal as well. Like, his missus steals the journal. She takes it to, well, she keeps it and tells the cops that her mates went missing. And the cops straight away, like, I don't give a shit. Fucking just return the guy's property and he won't press charges against you because it's breaking and entering we can get you for.
Yeah.
And that's a weird one as well, because that whole bit where they break in where he gets captured before he gets taken to the meat train, by the way, before he gets his feet through the hooks and everything. Yes. Like, that whole bit, if she'd stepped through that door, none of the ending would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, like, the other side of the door, you just got Vinnie Jones with a hammer in his hand just ready to take her head off. And she runs out instead with a journal, like she knows. It's a weird bit, that, as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because, of course, Leon doesn't jump on the train, and we'll talk about Leon jumping on the train in just a second. But he doesn't jump on the train until he sees that Maya is on the train.
Yeah, because that's a weird one as well. Like, he's getting tooled up. Like, he's in the art gallery place, and Brooke Shields is telling everyone about... Brooke Shields is telling him everyone that will buy his photos, you know? And he's standing in front of Vinnie Jones's photo that he's taken inside the meat factory. And she's like, yeah, it's too bleak. I don't think it'll
sell. Fuck, it's a good photo.
It's a really good photo. But that's the bit when he was investigating in the meat factory, and they basically sees him, and he runs and hides. Like, the core strength he must have to pull himself up on that hook.
Right.
And that freezing cold temperature is amazing, because I would struggle doing that.
Yes. Right, let's talk about them fucking jumping on the train, though. Because if there's ever a moment that I was going to be fully taken out of this film, it was that.
Yeah, because that's the thing. He's got tooled up and everything. He's getting ready to have a go.
He's got chainmail on and everything.
Aye. Well, you get that in Butchers.
No, I know. I know.
So he's went to the Butchers. He's went there. He's went to the meat factory getting tooled up. So he's got the hooks. He's got the knives. He's got the chainmail on. He's tooled up and ready to go. And that's when the copper had said to her, oh, your mate's on the train. So the copper has set his missus up by saying, oh, your mate that's went missing is on the train, at the last train from whichever one Mahogany's going to go on to. I think it's a Green Line or something like that, she said. Yeah. And so she's like, okay. So that all happens out the back of the restaurant. This is after she's run into the restaurant and got the gun from under the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy's holding two plates in his hands going, no, don't take that. Don't, like, he's not doing anything. He's just like, don't take the gun. Don't take it. Just talk to me in a minute. And she's already out the door and out the back with a copper and a gun in the copper's face.
Yeah.
And the copper is not even phased. And that's when you notice the symbol more on her neck, is when it's there. You see it more there than when they're at the actual cop shop.
Because
it's now on the back of a white top, and it's the gold chain, and it's right out on display so you can see it. So she's now made her way to the train. She's going to be on this last train with Vinny. And he's not getting on the train. He's loaded up in all this gear. He's got the whole chainmail and everything. So he's tooled up, and he sees her. The train's going past, and you can see he's not caring until he sees her. And that's when he starts running after the train and goes to get on it. And that's the moment that you think, well, you were actually going to bottle out at that point, you know?
Yeah, like, and then he does the most ridiculous, and I can't emphasize how much this is the most ridiculous jump onto the train.
He's running alongside, he grabs a hold, and he jumps on and uses the hook that he's picked up at the Butcher's to catch the top of the train. And you see the hook bouncing off of it as well. So it's not like it's actually caught onto anything.
Yeah, it's the most egregious part of this movie entirely.
And then he bursts the back window with his elbow. Even though he's tooled up, he bursts it with his elbow, which would just bust your arm open clean, because A, it's reinforced glass.
Mm-hmm.
So you would take so many swings at that, your elbow would be fucked. Oh, you wouldn't be able to use your arm.
But then later on in the fight, he gets a full-on stabbing through his forearm, and it doesn't really seem to faze him that much.
That's a famous one, though. Like, every movie does that. If you get stabbed through the forearm, oh, you're not fazed by it, it's fine, it just went through the bone. And that's only because of, what is it, Young Guns 2, where the Indian guy gets it through.
Yeah.
Like, every movie steals it from that. That's the first one I remember it from.
So, yeah, that's some of the negatives there. We've obviously talked, and anything else that you want to talk about then with this movie? Any other positives, any other aspects of the movie, any other negatives? I want to point out that I actually quite like the cinematography of this film. I think I think this film is well shot, and I think it's got some really nice looking scenes. You know, a lot of the sort of rotating scenes that you've got, especially around the tube, you know, when it's sort of rotating around the train and going back and forth, I kind of like the shots there, and I think it's got a decent score as well.
Yeah, I like all that. I like the ending as well, where you don't see these things properly. Mm-hmm. You just see them eating. And I also like the bit where the driver eats his tongue. I did like that. That was quite a creepy moment where the driver's holding him up with one hand. So you blatantly know that these guys are stronger with whatever these.
Well, yeah, because the driver's not a big guy either. Driver's a little guy, but the driver is not a big guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're absolutely right. No, I like those aspects as well, and I'm with you on the creatures. Like I'm kind of almost glad that we didn't get to we. On this show, we're like, less is always more anyway.
Yeah.
I think that was a perfect time to just show that little bit of restraint, not show us too much of the creatures, because again, you know, I think the potential was there for you to maybe lose things a little bit. So, no, I think they made the right call there.
Like, the cutting the heart out as well, that's an all right scene, but it's one of those ones that's like carbon copy from a lot of other movies that have had parts cut out.
Still and that's the thing. Hearts. Yeah.
Yeah. It just looks like it's what's his name again? Is the driver? He's holding the heart out, and it just reminds you of something from Underworld, you know? Because you just can see him with the fangs, and you know.
It reminded me of that episode of The Simpsons, where his babysitter rips his heart out.
I love the fact that it reminded me of Underworld and you, The Simpsons.
We went for very different references.
But that's the thing. After the heart, you don't know what happens with the heart, right? And the still beating heart, he's handing it to him. So you don't know if he's eating the heart or whatever.
I was thinking, he's going to eat it as well. I went there too.
And then, that very next scene is him getting dressed up like Mahogany.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just see him with the rings and everything, the copper's sitting there on the chair. She stands up and is like, here's his journal. Basically, you're taking over now. And you don't know at that point that it's definitely Bradley Cooper.
But we know.
You don't know for sure because he picks up the mahogany bag and everything. And then it zooms into the like photo of the two of them. Like the pole, is that a Polaroid or is it an actual thing?
I think it's a Polaroid.
There's a picture on the wall. And then as he's walking out the door, you see, like, that's the only thing you see there. So you sort of know it's Bradley Cooper at that point. And then it goes to the train.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts straight back to the very first scene you see, the guy that's basically the bald guy that slid in the blood. You see him walk past that guy, so you realise the very first scene, it's actually set at this point where Bradley Cooper's a guy killing them.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. I like the tie-in to the start of it again.
Yeah, it sort of wraps things up. For a movie that leaves so much unanswered, it kind of wraps things up in a nice little neat bow for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did for me. Like, don't get me wrong, I still had so many questions and stuff about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the thing is, you don't necessarily see him kill the people. I think it stops with him just cutting butt, looking like an absolute psychopath.
Yeah, the final scene is just him turning round.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a very good ending, put it that way.
Yeah, no, I would go with that as well. Okay, are you ready to move on then?
Yeah.
Right, let's get on and talk about some trivia. This is not going to take long because there's not any. And I know, Nico, that one of your favourite segments of the trivia is finding out who was originally cast or who considered to play various roles. I have no information about that regarding this. I could not find any anywhere. So
the funny part is, you know how I've normally got something that spoils it for you? I've got nothing on this one.
There was very little trivia. So I'll go through the trivia that I have got. As always, we'll start off with the finances. This movie had a budget of $15 million. Worldwide gross at the box office, though, just $3.5 million. So a big financial flop. However, that's probably got more to do with how this movie was pushed, specifically in America. So when this movie opened, it opened in 102 theaters in America, which are called dollar theaters. So it's basically like low budget theaters that charge very little amounts for their audiences to go and see these movies. Right. Which obviously, of course, I think the idea was they were going to charge that, put it in the dollar theaters in the hope that the crowds would come.
Right.
And of course they didn't. They didn't come. And this movie had a really, really bad opening weekend at the box office. And distributors around the world saw this. And a lot of countries, because of the poor performance of this movie in the States, in their country, made this straight to DVD.
Mm. It's the thing about it is, it's, I remember the trailers for it, and the trailers for it were basically totally different to what the movie is. I mean, totally different. It basically had it as, this guy is stalking this guy and trying to find out if he's the killer.
Yeah.
And I think that affected it.
Yeah, I think that will have affected it as well, because how many movies like that have we seen? You know, yeah. You know, that wouldn't have been a particularly original concept. And I think that's one of the, I think this movie does have an original concept, you know, like,
yeah,
okay, we've seen like Subway horror films before, that's not new, but I think it's a fresh twist on it. And yeah. I think that's another one of the sort of big positives that I have about this movie, is that it feels kind of fresh, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, I think the problem with it is it was marketed totally wrong, and the way that people went into it, because as I said, Buffalo was the only one that we didn't see. I wasn't looking forward to seeing this because I didn't even know it was a horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is going to be one of them boring, drawn out, like, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, oh, it's just, it's basically going to be like a stalkery type movie, is what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. We're almost done then with the trivia. So this movie was originally intended to be a direct sequel to Candyman.
Really?
I don't know if it was a case of they'd just... See, this is where the confusion for me lies in this one. I don't know if it's a case of they had originally greenlit a sequel to Candyman, and then for some reason it didn't... Because by this point, we'd had sequels to Candyman. But whether they'd greenlit like another sequel to Candyman didn't quite work out, so they just made this instead, or if this story was intended to be some sort of Candyman tie-in. I believe that they'd greenlit a Candyman sequel that didn't work out, and so they decided to make this instead.
Right.
But that's open again to interpretation. I could not find the full information about that. Because this would have been a bizarre Candyman film. I don't know how you tie this into Candyman.
See, it would be really weird as a Candyman sequel. Like, I don't want to sound racist here, but with all the white dudes doing the killing, it would be totally weird.
the biggest... it's the Candyman Mahogany crossover that we didn't know we wanted.
Ah, that's exactly it. It would be fucking strange, like...
The final piece of trivia I've got, and it's not even a piece of trivia, it's just an observation, and it's one that I've already pointed out. Vinnie Jones has just one word of dialogue in the entirety of this film. And to be honest with, like, it's one of the things as well, like, Vinnie Jones isn't not actually not a bad actor. Like, he's not, listen, Vinnie Jones is never going to be the biggest thespian or going or anything like that, but he's a solid actor.
He's not going to get an Oscar, put it that way.
No, well, he does, not for a horror movie anyway. they don't get Oscars. I kind of like that he was non-verbal throughout all of this, but I did like the fact that he still made noise. One of the issues that despite the fact that you know me, I love my Michael Myers, one of the issues is that he doesn't really make any noises. At certain points, so yeah, I really like that. But yeah, that's it for trivia. So.
That's all the trivia.
That was it. Like, that's all.
I didn't know anything because there was no interviews on it. There was nothing. Like, normally I used to watch all those like programs where they'd be interviewing upcoming movies and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any interview them talking about this movie. I don't remember anything about that at all coming up.
It's very interesting, actually, like just how little attention was actually paid to this movie. Because it makes you think that this is a terrible fucking film, and it's not. This is a good film. It's not, like you say, it's not going to win any Oscars. It's not the world's best movie. This is a good film, though. Good film.
Don't get me wrong, it's not up there with like your Evil Deads and stuff like that. It's not right up there in...
No,
like,
but it's in like the next couple of tiers.
Aye, I'd say it's on par with some decent movies.
Yeah, I would say so.
Hopefully we'll see that with the voting.
Well, we'll find out. Let's get onto it then. Let's get into the ratings and our final thoughts. As always, we will start off with the critics. IMDb scoring this film a 6 out of 10. Metacritic giving it 58 out of 100. Rotten Tomatoes critics, a little bit surprised by this, 73% fresh. And the Rotten Tomatoes audience, 50%. The critics' consensus, a creative and energetic adaptation of a Clive Barker short story with enough scares and thrills to be a potential cult classic. And it's one of the few times I think I'm in complete agreement with the critics' consensus.
Yeah, because like, I know a lot of people who have watched this and they will watch it again because they never knew about it.
Absolutely. So, with that being said, Nico, on a scale of 0 to 10, what are you going to rate The Midnight Meat Train?
I'd say 7.5.
7.5, okay. Okay.
Because it's good, but there is stuff wrong with it, and... As I said, it was totally billed wrong for me. It made me, like, the first time I watched it, I was going, this is so weird. Like, this is not the movie I've come to see. And that's what really affected me with it.
Okay, I can see that. I don't think I'm going to go quite as high as that, because I do still have issues with this film. And we've talked about them. You know, I have issues with the pacing. The CGI is fucking abysmal at times. And there's a few other little niggles here and there. But, I mean, I still think this is an above-average movie. And to me, if you're an average film, is a 5 out of 10. Like, slap bang in the middle. So I still think this is an above-average movie. So I'm going to score this 6 out of 10. And, you know, I think that's still fair. You know, it's like I say, it's above average. I'm known for being relatively harsh with my critiques and my scores anyway. And, you know, I look around at some of the scores that we've given other movies, you know, on the show, and I think that would put it on a par with some of those other movies that we've scored on the show. So 6 out of 10 for me.
See, rewatching it bumped up the score for me, because before I rewatched it, I would have probably been about the same as you. But rewatching it, all those little details that I missed before, I like that. And the sex scenes, I never pay attention to that. And them,
that's not like you.
During, I know, but them evolving him during them instead of it just being thrown in, like, because you know, horror films, they've normally got a sex scene thrown in just for the sake of it.
Yeah, there was a purpose to these. There was a sort of purpose to these ones, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was what I meant by that. Yeah. So that's what I quite liked about that, and that's why. But like, I took points off for the CGI, and I took points off for the bit in the middle where it just does have scenes where it's just, there's no point in them.
Yeah, no, definitely, I would agree with you there. But let's get into the overall scores. So our scores, combining those with the critic scores, gives The Midnight Meat Train an average of 6.2 out of 10. It puts it in 58th place of the now 8 many movies. I've still not updated this properly, so my numbers are still all to fuck. Close to 100 movies now, I think, we've covered on the show. So what was that? 6.2? Sorry, of the now 96, I was said right. It was close to 100 movies. 6.2. It gives it the exact same score as two of our recent episodes, actually. Gives it the exact same score as Eden Lake, and the exact same score as of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
I've not listened to the Elvira one yet, but I listened to the Eden Lake one.
Oh, yeah. What did you think?
I thought it was good, but I remember Eden Lake when it came out, and yeah, it's a weird movie, put it that way.
Just for some context, that some of the movies around it in the leaderboard, so it's just above things like Sinister, Ma, and Wolf Creek, who all scored 6.1s, and it's just below The Perfection, Insidious, and The People Under the Stairs, who all scored a 6.5.
See, People Under the Stairs should definitely be higher.
I think so. But I mean, like, it's in good company, I think, this movie. And it's you know, we were talking about the sort of tiers that movies are at, and I think this deserves to be in there with those types of films. Because none of those films, with the possible exception in my mind of The People Under the Stairs, are like top tier films. Maybe Wolf Creek.
Out of those ones you said, like Wolf Creek and Eden and all that, I think this is the one I would recommend out of those movies, but People Under the Stairs above it.
At this point, that just comes out of personal preference. I would recommend Wolf Creek over this film, and of course I would recommend The People Under the Stairs over this film.
Yeah, same.
But I think I would probably recommend this film over some of those other ones as well. So it definitely deserves to be where it's at. But let's move on. We've got some listener opinions to get into, as always. We throw it out across our social media accounts and ask for you guys to write in with some of your opinions of this movie, and of course we read some of them out on the show. So we're going to start with she might not be here, but she's always in here in spirit, Lindsay. She said that this is the most random leading cast ever. And we commented on that earlier, you know, like about the cast of this film. So it is a bizarre cast.
It's like you would never get them all in a movie again, would you?
No, absolutely not. War Daddy on Twitter says, I watched the movie because of the title, assuming it was going to be hot garbage, but it was actually weirdly not bad. And I think it pretty much just sums up what we've just said for the past hour and a half. Nick, aka the Time Miser, says it's solid and unfortunately largely ignored due to the title again. Like, people don't even know it's Clive Barker related. And you said you didn't know it was Clive Barker related.
I didn't, and I'm a Clive Barker fan. That was the problem with it.
Yeah. Again, previous guest of the show and part of our podcasting family over at The House That Screams, Shaun of the Dead. He says, I love this movie. The best Clive Barker adaptation, in my opinion.
That's a
bit of a stretch. Hellraiser for me will always be the best Clive Barker adaptation. I fucking love Hellraiser, but you know, it's appreciation for this movie, and I'm always down for that. And then finally, on Instagram at Amber Pictures simply says, "This film is a hoot," which it is. This film is a hoot.
I can't recommend it enough. Like, hopefully the listeners have actually watched the movie before they listen to it, because spoiler alert in it, you know, but
it's a bit late for the spoiler alert now, when I know an hour and a half into this fucking episode,
but yeah, like, hopefully they've watched it, and it's the ending that I love about it. It just goes off on one, but it goes off on a good one, you know what I mean? It's like, you know how films change at that point, and it goes off on one, it goes off on a tangent that you're like, who wrote this and how high were they? This doesn't come across like that. Mm-hmm. It's a tangent that, yeah, I could see it fall that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I just love the fact that it feels different.
Yeah,
it just feels different to, you know, every other sort of horror movie out there. You know, it's got, for better or for worse, you know, there's definitely, like we've been discussing, bad parts of this movie. It has its own sort of atmosphere, and I really like that as well. But yeah, that's going to do it then for this week's show. Nico, as always, thank you so much for agreeing to come back onto the show. Hopefully we'll get you back onto these the regular episodes a little bit more often again, because it's always been good fun having you on. And you've done a huge number of these now. It's not like this is your first rodeo on the main show. I think you've done, like, what, 12 episodes, I think, for us? Because you did Home Alone, you've obviously did the awards show with us. I'm trying to think back now to some of the episodes we've done. People Under the Stairs, we did Girl on the Third Floor, we did the vampire movies, we also did the remakes episode, Predator we did, Child's Play. So we've done a whole host of movies already, so hopefully we know we're going to get you back on to at least do one more in the future. We're not going to reveal what that is just yet, but you are going to be coming back, and obviously people can still find you as well on this, on the Patreon episodes. So yeah, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thanks for having me back on. I do like doing the horror ones, that's what it started as, and I would love to be on more of them, put it that way.
And of course your favorite movie we've ever made you watch is Troll 2.
Oh yeah, that was the highlight of all the things that I've been watching for this was Troll 2, and I'm almost vomiting green stuff as I'm saying that.
Nice. Don't forget, guys, you can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast, twitch.tv/Behind the Screams Podcast. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Behind the Screams, and you can also find us on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. And that's the quickest I've ever gone through those plugs. Before we get out of here, we're going to go a big shout out to all of our Patreon subscribers, including brand new Patreon subscriber Dustin Wertenbagger. Thank you so much for signing up to our Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. And to all of our existing Patreon subscribers, including Nico. Thank you so much for subscribing to us on Patreon.
Yeah, I hate when you do that.
You do, that. And I do it every time.
Yeah, but it's also, so cringy.
Yeah. But also, big thank you to Graham B, to Lorna Pearl, to the Girl That's Scary podcast, to Coyote Wildfire, the TGIF podcast, Galileo Jones, Boomer, Sophie Hodson, Claire Lusher, Kari J, Slayaway Radio Lee, and Lee Brash. Thank you to all of you guys so much for supporting us on our Patreon. We really, really do appreciate the fact that you are willing to separate yourself from some of those hard-earned pennies and send them over our way to keep the lights running, keep the lights on, keep the show running. So thank you very much. Up next on the show, we're back to regular Wednesday regular Wednesday episodes. The Cackle Crew is back together as well, and we're going in a very different direction. So as everyone knows, last week we talked about the new French Extremity movie Martyrs, which is possibly one of the hardest hitting movies of all time, one of the grimmest films of all time. Well, next week on the show we're doing Frankenweenie.
Oh, jeez. I haven't seen Frankenweenie, to be honest.
We're taking it in a very different direction.
I'm guessing it's a lot different to Martyrs.
Oh boy, is it. We're going to be talking about Frankenweenie. One of the reasons, one of the sort of requests we got when we did a live show a while ago was to do some slightly more kid-friendly movies. So for the next few weeks on the Wednesday shows, we're going to be doing a few slightly more kid-friendly horror films. But don't worry, we'll be coming back to some of the more hard-hitting stuff. I mean, I'm just looking at our list for the year. The rest of the year, because all of our Wednesday episodes for the entire year is already planned out, and we've got some really cool movies coming up, some movies that I'm really looking forward to talking about. But next week's going to be Frankenweenie, so please do stay tuned for that. But until then, thank you once again to Nico for joining us. Thank you to you guys at home for downloading and listening to this episode, and we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.